ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife Science.
When it comes to observing the universe, Australia has been helped by a strategic partnership with the European Southern Observatory, which allows Australian astronomers access to world-class big facilities in Chile, such as the very prosaically termed Very Large Telescope and the La Silla Observatory. But our strategic partnership is coming to an end, and the astronomical community is now taking stock of how vital these facilities have been. To talk some more about it, and by the way, what has happened to the NASA moon mission, we're joined by Dr. Sarah Webb, author, science communicator, and astrophysicist from Swinburne University. Sarah, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
This European Southern Observatory, this allows us to use a lot of big telescopes around the world, is it?
It certainly does. It allows us to use the best and cutting-edge telescopes that we have.
Why can't we keep using them?
So, unfortunately, it was a 10-year strategic partnership that was signed in 2017. And it's not that we can't keep using them. It's that we're waiting on the government to make a decision if they will continue this partnership. And that comes up next year in 2027. And it puts us in a limbo at the moment because there's a lot of fantastic science cases, engineering cases that are coming out of this partnership. And the future of astronomy really relies on access to these world-class 8-meter telescopes and beyond. There'll be bigger telescopes in the future under ESO as well. And so it's up in the air at the moment, and it's making us really reflect and appreciate how fundamental some of the science we've gotten so far has been.
Because the thing is, it's quite hard to book space on these things, isn't it? I mean, everyone wants to get on it. And so what this partnership allows Australian scientists to get on it, to get time, does it?
That's exactly right. It allows dedicated time. It also, within an amendment that they had made back in 2022, allowed Australian engineers and scientists to actually build technology and instrumentation for these, which is a phenomenal thing because it's what we are really, really good at here in Australia is technology for telescopes. And without that strategic partnership, it's much, much harder to get time on some of these world-class facilities, and it can leave us in the dark a little bit.
Mm. Australia's first large program was aptly called Magpie.
It was.
Which allowed us to study ionized gas in galaxies billions of years ago. Did we find anything useful?
We absolutely did. So the Magpie survey is an acronym for something much more, much less fun. But
you
Magpie.
Don't have to explain it to an Australian audience.
Oh, we always make up acronyms in astronomy, and we tend to make them animal related, which is fun. But the goal of this program was to look at galaxies that are kind of in this awkward phase. So we know that galaxies formed early on in the universe. And then as they continue to form, we see a couple of different pathways evolutionary-wise. Some die very quickly and get crunched. Some have massive star formation and bursts and continue on with their activity. And what this program was designed to do is to look at them for about 3 to 4 billion years ago, so almost older than our entire solar system. We're looking at this light that's coming in and understand what happened at that critical time to allow for star formation and galaxy mergers to continue.
I love the fact that we have been able to use the Very Large Telescope in Chile, but they're building another one in Chile, and it's called the Extremely Large Telescope, and that's expected to come online at the end of the decade. Now, what are these optical telescopes, are they?
They are optical telescopes.
So they're
telescopes.
Big mirrors. How big is the ELT, the Extremely Large one, going to be?
Absolutely massive. So this one is almost twice the size that we typically use in astronomy. And what is so fundamental, you can tell that we're very good at naming things here.
Yeah,
it's extremely large, very large.
I love it.
So what we're aiming to do is to be able to collect light from the very beginnings of galaxy formation. Now, with optical astronomy, we're limited in how far back in time we can see, but the bigger the telescope, the larger the mirror, the more resolution power we get, which means basically we get prettier, more precise pictures that allow us to do better science. And the ELT is going to be absolutely phenomenal for that. So the Extremely Large Telescope is, it's basically almost a 40-meter telescope. So it's 39.3 meters. To put that into perspective, the largest telescopes that we tend to use around the world right now, including the VLT, is 10 meters telescope.
Okay.
So this is exponentially bigger.
This is extremely large.
It is extremely large. It is aptly named. And it's going to, once it comes online, it's going to be just phenomenal. I cannot wait to see the data.
Now, tell me, what's wrong with NASA's moon mission, by the way? I mean, we all got excited about this. We thought it was blasting off in February, and then it's been put back to March, and now they're saying maybe not even then. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Like 50 years after the moon landing, we still can't make a big rocket that's reliable, can we?
It's very, very hard. So this, and we still don't have clear clarity on exactly when it is going to be delayed to. So over the weekend, just on Friday, they had a very successful, what we call a wet dry rehearsal, where they put in all of the liquid fuel into the rocket to make sure all the seals are intact. And that seemed to have been a success, which everybody was so excited about. And a mere 12 hours later, it was flagged that there was some technology issues as well, the technical difficulties. And that is probably in the readings of the gas flow itself, but it's unclear. And so it is turning out to be very difficult to get back to the moon. We know that with Artemis 1, there were several delays. Artemis 2, there's obviously been at least two delays, if not more, in the future. But what is so important, and I can't stress this enough, is that with Artemis 2, we have four human beings aboard. So it is paramount that everything functions as it should for their safety. And so even though it is a delay, I think it will be worth it in the end.
Can't they get some of those big Saturn rockets out of storage? I mean, we had 17 of those blasted the moon. I mean,
I wish we could. I believe we've only got one fully intact that was never launched. I believe that one is at the Kennedy Space Center. There's parts of them left over. But what is really interesting with this space launch system is that they're utilizing some of the old engine materials and engine functions that came from the Saturn V, which was just a phenomenally successful rocket.
It's funny. It is funny. Look, I'm not. It's obviously very difficult because you would have thought, you know, given the advances in technology, these things would be much easier to build these days. But they're clearly not. Now, by the way, just back to the big telescopes. Another program from that partnership was trying to work out what fast radio bursts are. Tell me about these. What are they, and why have they been so difficult for astronomers to figure out?
These are some of my favorite things in the entire universe. So fast radio burst is something we detect in radio light, so with our big radio telescopes, and they last for milliseconds. They are extremely quick. And with most things in the universe, we tend to see it in we tend to see them across a broad spectrum of light. So you might see something in radio, in optical, you might even see a gamma ray. With these particular bursts, we see nothing. We see them in the radio, and that is it, full stop. And so we don't know what they are. It is probably something extreme, like an event from a neutron star or even a black hole doing something very interesting and very extreme, but we can't confirm it. So what one of these programs using the VLT, the Very Large Telescope, was trying to do is figure out where they were coming from to look at their host galaxies and determine which part of the galaxy they were coming from, and does that give us any information to what their progenitors could be?
Okay. Now tell me about the serial-killing supermassive black holes. What are these?
these black holes are really...
holes have a bad rep, and rightly
they
so.
They do.
They're
doing nothing for the black hole rep here. When I saw this article, I giggled to myself because black holes already are terrifying. Supermassive black holes have the ability to essentially kill the galaxies that they sit within. They can do something where they essentially, it's called quenching. They stop the star formation. And if star formation in a galaxy stops, that's it. The galaxy kind of fades out. And what this new research has found is that if you have a supermassive black hole that is big enough and angry enough that it can actually quench galaxies beyond it. So it is affecting galaxies that are millions of light years away. And that is something that was really unexpected because we did not realize that that much power could affect things over such a vast amount of space and time. But the good news is that it appears to have been in the very early universe that these killers were on the loose, and our local current day universe seems to be a little bit more chill.
I guess we'll be gone, Sarah. Dr. Sarah Webb is with us from Swinburne University. Just back on the rocket, the Artemis rocket. You know, you can tell I'm obsessed by this. But they were thinking of landing on the moon by 28, weren't they? But that's probably not going to happen now, is it?
It's probably unlikely now. It is. So we know that Artemis 1 was delayed. Artemis 2 has been delayed. And depending on the outcomes from this Artemis 2 mission, it could fundamentally rejig what they need to do to be able to land on the moon. Right. Now, and then the thing is that they're not landing where Apollo did back over 50 years ago. They're trying something very, very ambitious, which is landing on the South Pole. So it's exponentially more complicated. And it is... You know, I really hope that we see it in the next few years, but I think we need to be prepared that it could be closer to 2030.
Yeah, it's whoever said space is hard was needs to be underlined, I think.
Space is very hard.
All right, Sarah, interesting. Good luck. And if after the extremely large telescope, maybe they'll build an humongously large telescope. You never know.
There was one proposed called the overwhelmingly large telescope.
Oh, love it. That's it.
Get us away from naming things. Take us away from it.
No. I'm very happy with your work. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah Webb's an author and science communicator and astrophysicist from Swinburne University.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.